The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on August 23, 1995 in Singapore. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 2, Verse 1.
So this is prose, so I just have to read it. Evam pitari sampravrite tad anusasune vartamana agnidro jambu dvipaukasa praja aura savat dharma vikshamana pariyagopayat. Translation by His Divine Grace today, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, after his father Maharaj Priyavrata departed to follow the path of spiritual life by undergoing austerities, King Agnidra completely obeyed his order. Strictly observing the principles of religion, he gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudvipa, as if they were his own begotten son. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Following the instruction of his father, Maharaj Priyavrata, Maharaj Agnidra ruled the inhabitants of Jambudvipa according to religious principles. These principles are exactly contrary to the modern principles of faithlessness. As clearly stated here, the king protected the citizens the way a father protects his begotten children. How he ruled the citizens is also described here. Dharma vikshamana, strictly according to religious principles. It is the duty of the executive head of a state to see that the citizens strictly follow religious principles. The Vedic religious principles begin with varnashram dharma, the duties of the four avarnas and four ashramas. Dharma refers to principles given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The first principle of dharma, religion, is to observe the duties of the four orders as enjoined by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to people's quality and activities, society should be divided into brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaisyas, and sudras, and then again into brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastas, and sannyasis. These are the religious principles, and it is the duty of the head of state to see that his citizens strictly follow them. He should not merely act officially. He should be like a father who is always a well-wisher of his sons. Such a father strictly observes whether his sons are performing their duties, and sometimes he also punishes them. Just contrary to the principles mentioned here, the presidents and chief executives in the age of Kali are simply tax collectors who do not care whether religious principles are observed. Indeed, the chief executives of the present day introduce all kinds of sinful activity, especially illicit sex, intoxication, animal killing, and gambling. These sinful activities are now very prominent, manifested in India. Although 100 years ago these four principles of life were strictly prohibited in the families of India, they have now been introduced into every Indian family. Therefore, they cannot follow religious principles. In contrast to the principles of the kings of old, the modern state is concerned only with the propaganda for levying taxes and is no longer responsible for the spiritual welfare of the citizens. The state is now callous to religious principles. Srimad Bhagavatam predicts that in Kali Yuga, the government will be entrusted with Dasu Dharma, which means the occupational duty of rogues and thieves. Modern heads of states are rogues and thieves who plunder the citizens instead of giving them protection. Rogues and thieves plunder without regard for law. But in this age of Kali, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the lawmakers themselves plunder the citizens. The next prediction to be fulfilled, which is already coming to pass, is that because of the sinful activities of the citizens and the government, rain will become increasingly scarce. Gradually there will become complete drought and no production of food grains. People will be reduced to eating flesh and seeds, and many good, spiritually inclined people will have to forsake their homes because they will be too harassed by drought, taxation, and famine. The Krishna Consciousness Movement is the only hope to save the world from such devastation. It is the most scientific and authorized movement for the actual welfare of the human society. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation purport. To text 1, chapter 2, canto 5 of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the activities of Maharaja Agnidra. So the previous chapter discussed about Maharaj Priyavrata, who was self-realized in his Brahmachari days, but his father requested him to take householder life, to be married, even though he was self-realized. He was worried that he would get distracted from his spiritual duties. But he was reassured that by engaging in devotional service, he would be protected. So he agreed to do the orders of his father and guru. And for that he got also the blessing of Lord Brahma. So he became very powerful in all respects, materially and spiritually. And he was able to achieve Krishna at the end of his life. Says the Grihastha Priyavrata, he had children and he handed over the kingdom to his son and departed to follow the path of spiritual life and undergo austerities. There's another aspect of the Vedic Kshatriyas, that they wouldn't remain in the office until the fag end of life. Now many old people, they try to the old statesmen, they want to remain in the power right till they die, practically. And they don't, just as long as possible. They don't understand that at least at the end of life, we should spiritually dedicate ourselves to spiritual activities and prepare ourselves for the next life. But the Vedic kings, they understood this. So Maharaj Priyavrata, he renounced his kingdom even while he was strong enough to go on managing for another 10, 20 years or more. Of course, their time period is in a difference, so it's been a long time. But when he saw that his son was good enough to manage that kingdom, then he handed it over to him and he was coronated as Maharaj Agnidra. Hare Krishna. This coronation is still observed to some degree in different countries that have monarchy, just in a symbolic way. But actually, just like how we have a ceremony that we install a deity, they have a similar kind of ceremony for installing a king. Not that he's a deity, but it's a different ceremony, but it's a similar, there's a ceremony like that where they chant mantras and he's done abhishek and certain things are done on him. And he's actually installed as that monarch, which means that he has to take the karma for all the activities of the people under him. And similarly, he gets the good and bad karma, both. 1/6 of whatever the citizens do. So, just like when you adopt a child in the Vedic culture, there's a yajna you do. And actually the gotra, or the family lineage, is transferred in the adopted child over to the parents. There's a ceremony for that. So then now the karma of that child will be connected with the karma of the parents. So there's a formal rite. The prince, the uncles, the princes, princesses, and others, they didn't have the same karmic responsibility. The king was actually responsible. Just like a husband, when there's a marriage fire sacrifice, he becomes responsible for the activities of his wife. If the wife does a sinful activity, he's responsible for that. And some of the wife, she's also gets a blessing that if her husband does any spiritual activities or pious activities, she gets 1/2 of all the pious activities, even if she doesn't do anything. If she also does, then she gets also her full share plus husband's half. That's why the pious ladies, you see, they have so many good qualities. They're getting 1.5 times the good karma. So Vedic culture, ladies are called as Devi and given a lot of respect. So, in this way, Maharaj Agnidra, he became a very exemplary head of state. Prabhupada uses the word here, head of state, because nowadays hardly monarchs are in power. Only a few places, like maybe Brunei or, I don't know. Huh? England and Malaysia and Nepal, they have in name, but not so much power is there. They're not very effective. Like that, there are in Europe, in Holland, she's visiting now, the Queen is visiting, I think, Indonesia. Like that, there are a few, but they're not so... actual monarch, I think, maybe only a few, like Brunei and... Huh? Nepal, they also took away most of his power. Jordan... In the Middle East, the Muslim kings in the Gulf, they are effectively ruling. So, king of Thailand has got a lot of power relative to others in modern day, but not like in the past. He was actually head of state. And the main job of the king was to protect the citizens. It's like Kshatriya means to protect. So there's a difference between now, a lot of time, the governments, they don't protect the citizen as much as they do things for their own benefit. They don't know really what's good for the citizens. Now what the difference was of Maharaj Agnidra, he knew what was good for the citizen because he was being guided by religious principles. In the Vedas it gives details how a king should manage, how head of state should manage, how he should organize the society. Today, in the world, we're facing so many problems. Just recently, the United Nations had its anniversary, and Prime Minister of Malaysia said that this, instead of being a day of celebration, maybe it should be a day of mourning. There's so many problems in the world, so many wars are going on, we should be mourning. So many people are being killed in Bosnia and so many places of the world. Because there's a reason for that. The governments of the world are not running according to religious principles. People are doing sinful activities. Therefore, even though they may follow the law of the state, but if the laws of the state are not following the laws of God, then there are going to be natural problems. So the Vedic time, the laws of the state and laws of God were in harmony. So even though India had many kings, but all of them were following the same system. See, the Kshatriyas, that they fought with each other, who would be the king? The strongest one would win. But this life would go on in the cities and the country, no one would be disturbed. Now when there's a war, it disturbs everybody. Like Kurukshetra, all the kings went and fought in the battle. The rest of the country, there is no effect. Now you have war, women, children, old people, cluster bombs, chemical bombs, biological bombs, nuclear bombs. They are meant for mass destruction. Even a few hundred years ago, the wars were only fought by the military. And civilians weren't affected so much. Even in Europe, Napoleon and all that, the traditional war was fought by the military. When American independence came, then they started the guerrilla warfare against the British, and that since then things have been different. So everything was done according to some principle of religion, and that was gradually being handed down, but over thousands of years, it gradually got lost. So it's predicted here that in the future, you can see how much it's already happening, but in the future, the heads of state are supposed to be doing dasu dharma, which means that mainly they'll be interested in levying different kinds of taxes and making it very difficult for the people to live with paying so many taxes. And they won't be concerned about religious principles, they'll just be considering how to make the government strong and get a lot of taxes, so on. Still, people in the world today are somewhat religious, but gradually this can go down and down. Since the government is not promoting religion, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning how the actual the Krishna conscious movement is the real solution or hope to save the world from the devastation. It's a very scientific and authorized movement meant for the actual welfare of the whole human society. Government can pass a law that the state and the government shouldn't have anything to do with each other. But the fact is that the people and their karmic activities affect the whole state. Therefore, it is important that the citizens do religious activities. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that alright, since today we have so many religions in the society, at least the government can ensure that whoever is professing a particular religion, they should practice it. We're seeing it to a certain extent in Malaysia, you have multi-racial, multi-religious society, that there the government makes people who at least follow the Muslim religion, they take some care that they should follow according to certain minimum standards. And if somebody in the name of Islam does something wrong, then the government steps in and stops it. Although I don't think they take much interest in other religions so far. But along these lines, Prabhupada said that we could see this could also be applied, this principle given here that the government should ensure that the religion is enforced by properly or practiced properly. Say somebody is a Hindu sannyasi, but he does a religious activity like mixing with women, then the government could enforce that if somebody is a sannyasi according to Hindu dharma, then the sannyasis mean they're celibate. If they get caught with a woman in a compromising situation, he can be arrested, handed over to the religious authorities who decide his fate. Such a law exists to a certain extent in Thailand and in Burma. You read sometime in the paper when you go passing through there. I read it one time, just recently it came also in the Straits Times, in the, how that some big Buddhist monk who is head of some monastery, he was accused of molestation of some minor girls, accused him of rape or something. So he's absconding. Well, this is a criminal activity, so that's why directly the police are involved. But if it was adult ladies, I was in Burma one time and it came in the paper that one monk, he was caught doing these things. So he was brought before the head of all the Buddhists, monks, and they decided on his case, and they, like a court martial. If you do it in the military something wrong, you're taken to the military court and they decide. And then they can decide that you'll be discharged from the military. Dishonorable discharge, they call some places. So then you don't get any pension and no nothing. You're just dishonorable discharge. Retirement means honorable discharge. So like that, they decided that this person can never be a monk again. He'll be derobed for life. And they made him take off his robes and gave him back his some civilian cloth and said, all right, go out. So somehow the government found that he is doing the wrong things and they handed over. Now it's interesting because in the British time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a magistrate. And although it was the Indian government and the British were there, but they were enforcing certain degree of the people had to follow certain moral standard because there was that the tantric, I forget, maybe someone remember his name. There was that tantric yogi who was claiming to be avatar of Krishna. And he was doing Rasa Leela with different people's wives, claiming that he's Krishna and this is the way to worship Krishna is you dance with me. And so innocent women were being misled by him. But none of the police could arrest him, even the husbands were complaining, because all kinds of sparks and things would come from his hair. If anyone touched him, he'd get a shock. So people were afraid of him. He's doing so many wrong things. The Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was the only one who had the guts to arrest him. So he's a magistrate, he went with the police, and he personally grabbed him and then arrested him and put him in the jail. But then because he was himself involved like this, so he didn't want to, he couldn't, I think maybe he couldn't judge the case. He had another judge it or something, and he pleaded for it or something. I forget exactly the details. Or maybe he judged it. What happened was that tantric, he cursed him. That if you don't, release me, your whole family is going to die. And even Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his family member, they got very sick. And people were pleading, relatives were pleading, please let this guy go, you're getting sick. He said, I don't care. He's committed Krishna Aparad. I must do this. And even he was going in the court, they had to literally carry him. He became very much affected. But then he finally the order was given that this person is a criminal and he'll go to jail for so many years, prison. So then, once he was convicted, then you had to shave up, cut your hair when you go into prison. So all the power, his tantric power he got from black magic was in his hair. And Bhaktivinoda, so cut his hair. The people went to cut. So many of this flames and things are coming, The police all ran back, ooh, I won't do. So he took the scissors himself and went, Hare Krishna, chopped the guy's hair down, and all his power was gone. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur, family member, they all became healthy again. No more problems. Sometimes by the magic, these people can cause a little disturbance, but it cannot have a permanent effect on the devotees, although superficially it may affect for a short time. You have to stay Even if something like that happens, one has to stay fixed in their devotional service. So the reason I'm just telling this story is how Bhaktivinod Thakur, he was, as a government, at least he was involved in seeing that this person was cheating people. And he took an interest. So it showed that the government then was involved at that time in ensuring certain degree of religious principles. I don't know all the cases against him. Maybe he did something that was not religious that gave the excuse, or maybe it was religious. But he was a 420, they call it in India. That means that's the criminal code for cheater. So in India, if you say 400 bis, means 420 in Hindi, everyone knows that this means cheater. Because that's the criminal code for cheating. There's few cases like that. There was another case recently, just 20 years ago or 10 years ago when I was in India, it came out in the papers. That one Indian, Sadhu, was there in Orissa, who was also claiming to be an avatar of Krishna. And he had a temple room, a little temple, and he would sit in the temple and people would close the door of the temple and open it, he'd be gone. He'd show everybody he's gone, and his disciple close the door again, open it, after some time he'd be back. When they open, he'd be back, and there'd be all hot Jagannath prasad. Said since he's not different from Jagannath, the prasad was just brought right from Jagannath Puri, he'd go and bring it back. So people thought, oh, he's an avatar, he's not different than Jagannath. So he also started dancing with the women. All the bogus people like to do this. They don't understand Krishna has nothing to do with material women. Even the gopis were locked up by their parents and husbands in the house. They left and went in the spiritual body to be with Krishna. The physical body was there lying down in the room. Krishna has nothing to do with material activities. But these people are all trying to imitate Krishna. They're demons. And they're doing all these offenses. So this person also was stealing the people's money. So they complained to the CID, the investigative department, criminal investigation department. And so they did a check in investigating, and they found about 100 meters away from that temple there was smoke coming out of the ground. And it was smelling like cooking rice and sabjis and things. So it's very interesting how the ground is producing such smells. So the next day when that sadhu went down and disappeared from his temple, they made a raid and went and looked, and they found that there's a trap door in the temple leading to a tunnel going underneath. So the police went there with some of the, and they found there the guy sitting there smoking underneath, you know, and he's a little cave like set up in there, and some few people are cooking their meals and packing it in that clay pot so he can bring out the hot food. And so I brought it from 300 kilometers from the temple of Puri. Actually, he's cooking it underground. I've seen the people like that. So then police showed all the villagers, look at how you've been cheated by this guy. And they said, okay, dear policeman, please, before you take him away, can you just give him to us for about half hour? We have a few things to talk with him. And they pulled out his hair one by one. All the big hair and beard, they just pulled it out. They gave him like that, then you can imagine how much. So like this, they find a lot of bogus people are there. Even someone gets some magical tricks or powers, it doesn't mean he's an avatar. Nowadays, if somebody can produce some fruit from the air, or some jewelry, then people think he's become avatar. Magicians can do that, many people can do that. The great yogis and the Vedas, you see, even they can produce sometimes a planet. They could do wonderful things, they could bring the dead back to life, but they never claimed themselves to be a Bhagawan. They just were very powerful rishis and yogis. Nowadays, if somebody can even do a trick, or even make believe, you find that they claim to be a god. And it creates so much confusion amongst the people. Nobody knows whose actual god is. It's a big problem. In India, there was in Bengal also so many false avatars. You go on history after history. One guy was claiming that he's a reincarnation of Lord Chaitanya. He said Lord Chaitanya came to be in the mood of Radharani, and he came to be in the mood of a Manjari. And he's claiming like that to be Lord Chaitanya Krishna avatar. He's also doing some nonsense. He was caught with somebody's wife, and then they got beaten up very bad with sticks and everything, and he went hiding in a cave. Then in hiding in a cave, and he stayed there a long time. So then his followers, they see he's a great tapasya. He's been in a cave a long time. He's doing tapasya. It's all false things that the person said. But he's there for a few years actually, or months, a long time. What happened, he started getting sick. There's no sunlight. We need a little sunlight for our health. So they brought the doctor. The doctor said that his bones, everything became weak. Being out of the sun, he needs to be taken in the fresh air. You take him on a bullock cart and take him around and you get some fresh air. They put him on the bullock cart to take around. Somehow he fell off the bullock cart. When he fell off, he died. So the followers, they said, now what are we going to do? He's our avatar. We're dependent on avatar for our livelihood. So they decided and they made an arrangement and bought one baby from someone and put the baby and they dug a samadhi hole and put the baby inside and said, look at, he's reincarnated. So he's a new avatar. But actually the baby was stolen and sold, and the parents came looking for, here's our baby, you took our baby, made a case against them, and then the avatar was taken away. Like this, they do so many nonsense things and just to try to create the illusion that they're Bhagavan. So because this all, why does this thing happen? Because governments don't care about religion. And so people get the opportunity to do nonsense. But if somebody claims to be God, you see, like in Islam, in an Islamic country, you can't claim to be Mahaprophet, you know, or Muhammad or something. If you dare to do that, you'll probably be hung. Without a doubt, no? At least that's the one good aspect of it. Problem is that they're not doing the same equally for all religions, and therefore there's not that opportunity. The Vedic principle is that the principles of religion should be protected by head of state. It's a good principle if you do it across the board for everyone. Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Buddhist, whatever the principle, everyone should follow. Recently there came a case in Bengal. Guy was claiming to be Bhagavan. This only one about 2 years ago. And then he died. Saw the followers. They're very upset. So he said he wouldn't die, and he died. So they said he's not actually dead. He's in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. There's a kind of samadhi where you stop all the bodily breathing, heartbeat, everything, and go into deep samadhi. They say he's not dead. You don't feel his heart or anything because he's in Nirvikalpa Samadhi. And they kept his body on a big ice block. And the followers, they're collecting people coming in and touching his feet, and they're charging 10 rupees a piece, 15 rupees selling locket and things. Every day they're making hundreds of thousands of rupees income. Like that, 55 days is going on. And the neighbor's saying, look at, if he's in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, why had to keep him on a block of ice? The guy's dead. He's decaying. He's smelling. This is a bad health problem. We don't wonder, is this guy, this all cheating, these people are making income of innocent people, saying he's in samadhi. He's dead. So finally enough people got together and started complaining. The government did a raid. And then they found that what these people were doing, in the house, there was a look-alike of that guy. With a big beard, he had a big beard and everything. So his beard wasn't fully long enough. But his look-alike, another few months, you know, his beard will be long enough. So it was obvious what they're going to do. At one point, they're going to get rid of the body and have the lookalike come out and say that I'm that guy, came back from my samadhi, and go on with the cheating business. And people say, look at, he's resurrected from the dead like Jesus. Like so many great saints in the Vedas, like Dhruva Maharaj and others. So these things, you know, they all got exposed, they all got arrested. They found all these things inside the house. So these things are going on in modern society. It's just 2 years ago. And there's still so many Babas and so many people who are claiming to be Bhagavans. If you did a raid, you'd find so many things. But some are so big and powerful that nobody dare to do it. And some are like these small timers, you know, they get exposed. But actually the government's supposed to protect the innocent people against these things. But the government is sort of their calendar, they don't know what is religion, what is irreligion, so they just don't get involved. That is the problem. Because they don't know, therefore it's very difficult. Therefore it's very difficult. Even a bona fide religion, they may say it's not bona fide. In a bogus religion, they may say it's okay. And they don't know the principles. So in one sense, it's better not involved if they don't know the principles. If they know the principles, like Agnidhar Maharaj, then it's okay. If they don't know the principles, then it's also a problem. So what the Krishna Conscious Movement is basically for, to save the whole society. Since today is mainly democracy in the world, we have to educate the people. What are the principles of religion? So they can know what people, religious people, should be doing. And that's why it's important that devotees have to themselves be very good examples. Especially the devotees who are representing the religion directly. There's a difference between a practitioner and someone who's directly representing their religion. Well, anyone who's a practitioner should try to follow the principles of the religion. But someone who's directly representing and preaching, they should definitely follow. That's the principle of Brahminical culture. The Brahmanas are the teachers of religious principle. They have to live a sattvic life, avoiding the sinful activities of meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication. And they have to be practicing what they preach. The reason why you divide the society up into four orders is because the people who are Brahmanas, they should get special tax exemptions. But to earn that, they should live in a simple way and they should lead a holy life, avoiding these different activities. In the Vedas, it wasn't required that you had to be a monk. Monks enjoy this kind of facility in the Buddhist countries. But in the Vedic culture, even the householder Brahmanas, they would also enjoy that. But they lived in a very simple way. They lived according to certain religious principles. So Prabhupada said even one day they got $1 million, the next day they'd be a beggar again. Because they immediately spend it on some Krishna conscious purpose. They won't be hoarding it. But they'll spend it on the deity, spend it on distribution of prasadam and so on. So they were allowed to beg. Others were not. A kshatriya, he was allowed to take tax, but he had to act on the principle of citizens. So the Vedic government was clearly given what things they should do, what they shouldn't. Minimal things were done by the government. Not everything was done by the government. But protection against thieves, maintenance of roads and things like that, these were governmental requirements. Protecting the people in time of drought and famine and flood. The Vaishyas, they were the economic base. They were to provide the income for the country. They're the main people that paid the taxes. All the Vaishyas were paying the taxes and maintaining the government. Krishi, Goraksha, Banijya, Bani, agriculture, cow protection, trade and business, as well as banking. All these activities for the Vaishya category. Then there were the workers, the Sudras. The Sudras, they had a lot of benefits. It wasn't that they only recently they became exploited, but in the beginning they were also to be protected. But if someone was a Sudra, there were less rules and regulations they had to follow. But they were guaranteed that they had to be provided with adequate income to maintain their necessities of life. So how to apply all these principles in Kali Yuga and modern society is very difficult to say. But to a certain extent we could see that they could be applied. The idea that Bhaktivinoda Thakur expressed is that today we should apply it as a daiva varnashram. Not that people are categorized in a particular caste, but that everyone is one caste, which is a devotee of God, devotee of Krishna. But according to their particular work and quality, they act in a particular way. The duties are different according to your occupation. We see today, like the teachers, they're supposed to be brahmanas. To be a teacher, you should be a brahmana. Brahmana means they should have a high character. But what's happening is in many countries, the teachers are low-life. And they're molesting the children. Priests are molesting the children. In the Catholic and the different religions. So these are highly disturbing to the whole faith of the children, if their teachers and their religious leaders molest them. Then where's the question of them having any faith in religion or having any faith in society? So that's why nobody could be a teacher unless they had a very high moral standard. Nobody could be a priest unless they had a high moral standard. Nowadays, even in Malaysia, one of the devotees went to one of the ashrams and found that in the room of the priest there was beer and meat and everything in his fridge. And they said, how can you do that in the temple? You're preaching that you have to follow a pure life, and here you're not following. He said, when I'm in the temple, I follow a pure life. This is my private life. You have no business to look at this. There's a double standard. In the temple he's saying one thing and his private life saying another. That's not Brahminical culture. Brahminical culture means all the time you act as a Brahmana. So the rules would be different. A Kshatriya is allowed certain enjoyment. They are allowed to do certain things, but Brahmana was not allowed to do those. And the things that Brahmanas were allowed to do, the Kshatriya couldn't do. So it was a traditional system. In a broad society, following principles, what the basic duties or what the qualities are, these need to be applied if you want to have any kind of a progressive society where things actually work. So one of the principles of the Kshatriya was that at the end of life, they should hand over the management to their son, and they should renounce and take on spiritual life. So that's how this whole chapter is beginning. Priyavrata Maharaj has renounced the world, gone into his austerities and spiritual practices, and handed over the kingdom to his son Agnindra Maharaj. Now Agnindra Maharaj is a young man, he's a powerful king in the prime of his life, and we're going to read about the different trials and tests he goes through and how he reacts to all those things. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare Hare. Any questions? So the Prabhupada said that this hereditary system doesn't work. They become a demoniac varnashram. But some basic principles of varnashram are still needed in society for preserving the order. This brahmachari, like in ISKCON, We don't go into the varnas so much. This require in the future. Because basically everybody in the temples are all supposed to be acting like brahmanas. But in the general society, you'll see there's a big difference of people. So also we haven't done a very detailed study on that. But the principle is Daiva Varnashram. Not that you categorize somebody by birth. You see, in India what happens is that someone would be born in a so-called Harijan family. But he might become the minister. And the peon in office might be a brahmana. So the brahmana peon has to deliver the file to the minister, who's a, say, a Harijan, what they call Harijan, meaning he's a sweeper family. But he may be a very highly educated, good qualified person. The brahmana peon won't touch the minister. He's untouchable. He'll throw the file on his desk without touching. This kind of thing is there. So it's like you find delivering the coal to our temple in Calcutta, sometime the coolie, what they call coolie, the one who carries the coal on his head, he's completely covered black. He's just carrying on his head a basket of coal, but he's got a Brahmin thread. What is the meaning? He may be born in a family of Brahmanas. He's no longer acting as a Brahmana. He's acting as a laborer. He's acting as a Sudra. So they're just following it by birth. But the Vedic system, a guna karma, vivagasa, by quality and by work. So some basic principles there that society, how people should act in a particular way. If you say that coolie is a brahmana, surely doing all that work, he probably is smoking gansa and doing so many things. Maybe as a sudra he can do that. But he can, simple things, some things sudras can do. He's definitely not going to be acting as a brahmana in his private life if he has such an occupation. But if he's given a respect as a, he's supposed, you know, thinking he's a brahmana, acting like, people get confused. So within society, what different people can do, or at least what duties they have, never mind the regulations, but at least the positive duties they have, what qualities they have, that has got some importance. Like a Vaishya, what's his duties to society? He's supposed to maintain society, he's supposed to give charity. A Kshatriya is supposed to protect the citizens. A Brahmin is supposed to teach. So leave aside even the other aspects of it, but at least the positive side of it is an important thing for organizing society. Because sometimes teachers don't know what is their duty to society. Head of state doesn't know what is duty. Head of state here, it says his duty is to see people follow religious principles to protect them from their own sins in an administrative way. So if those things Prabhupada said that in the future we need to establish some system of Daiva Varnashram, not that we take the thing that's there today, that's distorted, perverted, it's not, that's finished. But in a higher principle, gleaning out the principles of it, just like Iskand wanted to say, we're following Varnashram Ashram side. So as being a brahmachari, if I start mixing with women, won't that be a disturbance, Maharaj? So then we say that you're brahmachari, you have to be celibate, you don't mix intimately with women, just business only. But if you want to have association with a woman, and you get married, and then you have association with a wife according to religious principles, and that's all right. That's equally good. The point is you have to follow some system. Now, every society has got rule for marriage. The problem is they don't have the rule for brahmachari. So what happens, you get bachelors, and then you don't really get the good quality marriage, because people don't get trained up in celibacy. So at least the ashram side we're already trying to implement as best as possible in Kali Yuga. So probably in the future you also need to have the varna side, things like cow protection, are needed in society. That's supposed to be done by Vaishyas. how this is a big subject. Prabhupada said, I am not yet able to do this. That was what he was, when the last thing he was doing, he said, I'm going to go and sit in Gita Nagari, and I'm going to personally establish a Varnashram community and show you how to do it. But then he never made it. On the way he got to London, he was very sick, he came back to India and stayed in Vrindavan. But his idea was to try to establish some Varnashram farm communities. Varnashram only works in a rural area, in an ideal setup. In the city, it's quite limited what you can do. It is a long-term project. The point is, first people have to be human beings. Human beings mean they follow religious principles, then you can organize them in a responsible way. So if everybody is a devotee, then it's very simple. So I agree with you to that extent, but Prabhupada did want us to establish some sort of divine Varnashram. So you can get more punya. This is a good deal. The point is that a lot of time they may be busy in housework or something else. They may not always do all the religious activity. At least if they encourage the husband, they'll get half without doing anything. If they're also religious and also doing, so then they can get bonus. That's my point. Some wives are very religious, so then they get this advantage. On spiritual activities, more this is punya, this pious activities. Spiritual, just like many times you go to an Indian businessman, ask for a donation, they say, I have to talk to my wife. So you do get that situation, and the wife says, okay, give the donation. She's also participating, so she gets a share. When you do something Krishna conscious, it's spiritual. So spiritual things are in a higher category. There everybody shares equally. But for this, the punya karma, say even the wife doesn't know she's back in the house, the husband gives a donation, some pious work. She's also benefiting because both their karmas are joined. But if a husband does sinful acts, she doesn't get the share in the traditional setup. In modern setup, I can't say, but the Vedic system is like that. Any other question? Guru, any question? What about the children? They benefit when you involve them. This way the parents are meant to involve the children in spiritual activities. Most of the samskaras, like there's the dasam samskara, so all those samskaras are for the benefit of the children. Up to the time where the child is able to decide things for themselves, then there's so many samskaras. Beginning from the conception of Garbhodan samskara, during pregnancy there's samskaras, birth samskara. After 6 months, the first grains you give the prasadam, anaprasana, then cutting the hair, samskara. Then when they go to school, you're supposed to take them to the one of the brahmanas and he'll do the first writing. The first one they're going to learn to write, they'll write on a chalk, Hare Krishna. And they have a prasad and everything. Then Lord Chaitanya, when he was doing that, the first, he did also the first writing, he wrote Hare Krishna. And when he was doing anaprasana, at the same time they gave the namkaran, the giving the name, is a ceremony also, giving a religious name. So when they gave the first grain to Lord Chaitanya, the father wanted to know, it said at 6 months of age, the remembrance, the tendency from the previous life is still pretty strong in the child. As they grow up, then all new programming comes. So that's why they give them the choice, whether they choose the money or the books. That just means what's the tendency coming from the previous life. Now these parents can give a new association, a new tendency in this life. But you know where you're starting from. That doesn't mean what the future will be, that means what the past was. What the tendency is. You can grow on that tendency or you can develop it further. So, Jagannath Mishra, he poured out small coins, silver coins, gold coins, in different piles. He put pens, different kinds of books, material books, really many, logic, pandit, just normal pandit books, Vedas, Upanishads, and then finally the Puranas and the Bhagavad. So there's a whole array, not one thing the child could choose. So that way he see whether if he went for the money, was he going for the gold, was he like a big timer or just a small timer in the money. Usually we just put money, but they put so many varieties. They let Chualoche, little Nimai, go, but he crawled immediately to the books. And he picked up one of the books and he just started hugging it. So all the pundits, they said, wow, he's going to be a super pundit. He's got so much, then he just went right for the book and grabbed it. But the Vaishnavas, they said, which book did he grab? And they saw he went for the Bhagavatam, and he was hugging the Bhagavatam. So then they said, oh, he's a great devotee. Tendency is devotional. So like this, all these samskaras, I mean, what can a child do for himself? It's a good question. A child can't do anything for himself. Because they're just dependent on the parents. But they're giving their first grains, doing all these ceremonies, are ways to bring the child spiritually up, even while they're dependent on you as a parent. Similarly, bringing them to a temple, having them go to different festivals and take prasadam, join the kirtans and things. All these are ways to build up their spiritual benefit. Sometimes you find that the parents, they'll come and they put a note in the child's hand. Child can hardly hold the note. They say, okay, have the child give the donation. They want the child to get the benefit. So parents like that, in the beginning, they do things to bring their child up. Then by that training and background, then when the child's older to choose for themselves, they explain why they should want a spiritual life, give them a... That's why we want to have for our congregation different programs like special school for the children. There are programs like in the Middle East, all the families are working their expatriates, mainly where programs there are with the expatriates because it's illegal to preach to the locals about the Krishna consciousness in an open way. So we found that the best way was we provide a lot of courses for the children. They have rapid study course, 1 year cover the whole Gita, and crash course during the holidays, 6 weeks of the summer vacation, going through the Bhagavad, some of the Krishna book or something. Rapid study, that's a crash course. And the different types of courses like that. And this way, so many parents, because the children got involved, then all the parents come involved also. You have award nights, you have them do recitation, all the parents will come because they all love their children. They have to come when the child is doing something. And this way, by coming, and first they hear a class, then they have the ceremony. So gradually they start to say, well, Krishna consciousness is very nice. That way we have hundreds of families involved. But they came through the children. So responsible parents, they want to see the children get the education. It's important. But even that's a good way of bringing their parents closer to Krishna also. But as the children become closer, the parents get closer also. Is that okay? Maharaj, if someone becomes a pure devotee, goes back to Krishna, 14 generations get delivered. Here, I'm not even saying that being pure devotee, but just being a devotee and a religious person. If they can become pure devotees, that's their ultimate objective. That they should lead their life very as a totally in a Krishna conscious way. whether they're householders or whatever they may be, but they're fully involved in Krishna consciousness. It means that they're eating prasadam, they're chanting, they're doing everything. At the end of life, they go back to Krishna. Automatically, the parents have contributed something for that. They have a debt to their parents, to karma, and grandparents, so on. That birth, 14th generation, they all go back. Seven parents, grandparents, and seven children. So some parents said, you know, I don't know if I'll ever be able to go back. At least my child, you please train up nicely, so this will be my ticket. Irish families, I don't know what their theology is or idea, but they seem to have this tradition. One child, always they want to be a priest. They said most of the missionaries are Irish at one stage. I don't know now, but it used to be the tradition. Even in Buddhist countries, usually at least one child, if not all, at least one they want to be a monk to get the benefit. It used to be Hindus and Sikhs were very close in Punjab. There was no difference. But every Hindu family would have one of their children become a Sikh. Sikh were like the militant, more dedicated kind of Hindus at that time. It was like that was the, there was no difference. That was the tradition. Now they created, you know, all this division. But before that was I heard that from the Punjabis. But the tradition that one child should do something more religion is something, again, coming from ancient. But the original thing is that they become a pure devotee. They go back at moksha, then 14th generation get. And that doesn't matter. Previous lives.
Yes. It means in his previous life, his family goes to the life of 14 generations.
You see, if the person is a complete Gnostic, doesn't believe in God in it, he may get Brahma Jyoti. Liberation. They're devotee, they become according to their preference, their nature, they may get a particular kind of liberation, but they'll get liberation. And not, as you said, this is not two-dimensional, three-dimensional, multi. Past, future, and previous. This is very for this whole kings and varnashrams, a touchy subject, you know, in some places, you know, people might misunderstand that it's a complicated issue. But it's also important to know because we see that many people criticize the caste system and everything, but originally the system wasn't bad. But it got perverted, that's the point. Now if it's to be at all in society, it has to be on a totally different footing, based on some higher principle, not on the principle that was there before, of hereditary, that would have degenerated to. So that's the essence we can glean out from it. Hare Krishna.